Welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I'm Susanna Mars. We're at Hotel Deluxe today. It's Friday, and there's some lovely music here today, live for the tea that they serve here. And I have a bunch of wonderful friends, old and new, that are involved in the artistic community in Portland. I've got Bob Hicks, Damaso Rodriguez, Jose Gonzalez, Chantal DeGroat, Beth Harper, and Daryl Grant. And I'm going to let them introduce you to what they do in the arts community. And beautiful David just served something fantastic. You want to tell us about it?
Yes, we have tartare, their brie, and caramelized onions and
filet mignon. Wow, excellent.
Thank you.
I guess, Damaso, why don't you go first, but we'll save a little tart for you while
Thank
we eat them.
My name is Damaso Rodriguez, and I am Artistic Director of Artist Repertory Theater. And that keeps me busy enough.
Okay, Chantal.
Yeah, my name is Chantal DeGroat, and I'm a company member with Third Rail Repertory Theater. I'm also one of the acting coaches for the August Wilson Monologue Competition, and I've also started a small organization called The Color of Now that unites activists and artists.
I am Beth Harper, and I'm the producing artistic director of the Portland Actors Conservatory, an acting school in town, and a professional director and acting.
My name is Jose Gonzalez, and I'm executive director and founder of Milagro, now in its 33rd season.
And I'm Bob Hicks. I'm a writer and editor, and I've been writing and editing about the arts in Portland for donkey's years.
And I'm Daryl Grant. I'm a jazz pianist and a composer. I'm also a professor of music at Portland State University, and I direct the Leroy Vinegar Jazz Institute. And I guess that's my three things.
I've been thinking a lot about talking today, and I've been thinking about my charge as an artist coming up for the new year, since this is really one of the last podcasts here at Hotel Deluxe, at least this year. And as I look to you all as arts leaders, what do you feel culturally is our charge for the upcoming year? What are you hoping for, and what are your plans, you know, personally, and then also what are you thinking about trying to inject into our community to inspire us here in Portland?
Well, okay, this is Daryl. I'll start. I guess, given where we live, given this, the dynamic of Portland, some of the cultural and political changes that we see on the horizon are not necessarily making people excited and optimistic. And I think one of the things that's interesting is that we as artists have an opportunity to directly address and sort of confront the feelings of the community that we serve. So I feel like while it's not necessarily going to be, it might not be the best time for our community, it's a really, really fertile time for us as artists to put forward our, you know, sort of our mission. And so for me, that's really about making the community stronger and connecting people together. I feel like the thing that you hear the most about what's happening now is the divisiveness. And so I feel like for me, the mission is to, you know, counter the divisiveness with art that connects.
I know that you just did a Hands Up Portland event at PSU.
Right.
And I thought that was wonderful how you coupled, you know, the connections you have in the music world with an artistic endeavor. Mm-hmm. And that was really exciting.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a really exciting time. Like what you were saying, as artists, how one of our jobs is to express and reflect what's going on with around us and within ourselves. And even though, this election season has been deeply shocking, I will say that I feel like it's the best thing that could have happened, because people, mainstream dominant culture, is understanding that things are not all well and good. And I think that if Hillary had won, we'd probably face another couple hundred years of high-fiving each other and feeling progressive and feeling like we did a great job. So with all the unrest, I'm excited by the honesty and by the waking up, and I look forward to the arts because it's going to reflect so much of that. And I'm so excited to see all the people that have space to rise, you know, rise up and be heard and seen and express and create.
You know, yeah,
I'm sort of,
yeah. I think at the conservatory, where we're training artists, you know, to learn to walk empathetically in somebody else's shoes, where the values that we teach are about becoming the best, it's a societal mirror that we can be, that there's a, I think that we have the opportunity to mirror to the rest of the world the best of America, because our values are the best of America. Value of human connection, the value, there are virtues instead of negatives, where ensemble is the goal, where diversity is the point, and where all stories have value. And just to be that kind of societal mirror, I think is important. Be a little more like us.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting too, because I've noticed in my own self, you know, being a white woman and I'm Jewish, certain stories resonate with me because of my cultural heritage. And I'm working with Civil War on Civil War Christmas, and knowing that I had quite a lot of privilege in my ability to speak my mind and to hear my story, I feel as though there's also some room for those of us who have had this privilege, a voice, to sit back a little bit and listen and support various art communities or art makers in Portland, for instance, that I never knew about. Theater companies that I hadn't attended for one reason or another, but just to be kind of cognizant about what I've maybe accidentally missed out on because of my own bias, you know, and that's kind of exciting. You know, to think, what's going on here that I don't know about? I mean, so many stories I've covered in Civil War Christmas that, you know, are mind-boggling as we get fed certain history that we come to accept, now knowing how many other pieces of the story haven't been told. And that's exciting to me.
I think it's really interesting that, just about everybody who's spoken so far has talked about stories, and I think that's really what it's about. We write stories at Oregon Arts Watch, where I do most of my writing and editing these days. What kinds of stories, and what is the connection between the stories that artists tell and the stories that are happening in the larger culture? Right now, I mean, there's a disconnection in a sense that the culture moves fast and the arts move slow. It takes time to put a show together. Even when you're putting up something that's new, it started probably 3 years ago. At least if you're doing a revival, of something that might be 100 years old. How do you keep up with the changes in the culture when you're working at a naturally slower pace?
That's so interesting, because it brings to mind what they talked about with this election, which is how Trump was able to be so flexible on the ground, where our old ways of being in an election have been ingrained. The way we do things are ingrained. You do it this way, you do it this way, and it's kind of turned on its ear. And so how do we get more flexible, like to reflect like a little more rapidly, maybe?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are historical examples of that. I mean, just sticking to theater, you know, during the 30s, there were the living newspapers, for instance, which were, I think, maybe you guys know a little better, but I think it tended to come out about a week at a time. You know, there was basically a news script, kind of the way that television comedy shows, social comedy shows work now. You know, Jon Stewart and the like. It's boom, 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 what's happening? And it's disposable theater in a way, in the sense that it's meant for this very moment. But that doesn't mean that it's bad theater, it just means it's theater for a certain moment. Then, you know, there are other layers. You look at older pieces and you see what is applicable in Shakespeare or in Noel Coward or whatever you're looking at. What's the current slant on that? What does it mean? And a lot of what artists do is not political, it's personal, and yet in a time when politics has become personal and the personal has become political, they're the same thing. So whatever level that an artist comes into the conversation is probably a legitimate level. Maybe the trick is to have a little bit of all of them, up and down the ladder.
Well, I think at the conservatory right now we're doing hay fever and anything being more classic, right? But we're doing it with a multicultural cast. We're doing it with a girl who's blind, who's playing a sighted person. So within that work, and then we're taking a right turn and doing or a left turn and doing Susan Ward Parks in the blood with the same group of actors. You know, and so that experience for those young artists, that value right there is value. You know, we're not changing hay fever, we're not changing the words or no power. We're just inviting everybody. That's one of the things we can do.
Well, I feel really focused because of the state of the world right now in the election. It sort of clarified the kind of urgency that's required, at least in theater, I think. You've gathered all these people into a room to experience a play, to experience a story, and what was worth all of that effort, not only to raise the money to produce it, but all the effort that it took for those people to make space in their lives, to tune out, to turn off their devices, etc., and get in a room together. So what? Why are we bothering? What's the conversations that is going to come from that? And I think there's a place for escapism in theater and in the arts, but that I don't feel right now at Artist Rep that's our purpose. And I felt that at other points in my time here, that you know maybe we're going to provide that, or we're here to maybe soothe people or warm people emotionally. And I certainly think there's value in that kind of art. But for us right now, it's going to be about what kind of conversation happens as a result of the play. And I think modeling the world as well. Like I think that's something what we were talking about, Beth. Like how are we representing the world in an ideal version on stage based on who's doing the work. But I feel like right now, if I can't easily answer why are we doing this play right now, it immediately drops off the list. And I'm in the middle of season planning, so it's on my mind.
So one question I have for you about that specifically is, do you feel like it's easier to model the world as we believe it or would like it to be when the rest of the culture is also in the sort of, you know, the current of legislation and, you know, politics is supporting that? Or do you feel like it's in a way easier to do it when it's counter to the prevailing idea of what the world is? Do you know what I mean?
I personally feel it's easier to be disciplined about being counter to the prevailing sense if we're not living in a time of progress. It kind of clarifies the stakes, right?
Right.
So what does it mean when we continue to allow an all-male creative team to dominate the process when we're witnessing a predominantly male government, you know?
Right.
So, I don't know, I've always been driven by, I think my impulses in the theater, as I sort of found my way as an artist, came from the group theater in the 30s. The Living Newspaper was of that era as well, Bob referred to, and it seemed like theater had to be really relevant and a bit counterculture and progressive, you know? And I feel like we've gotten lost in our field because we focus so hard on surviving the economics of it. And I don't know that playing it safe got us out of our economic challenges anyway. So I'm feeling, you know, just to, it's time to check in on our integrity and push ourselves. So I'm stirred up.
Yeah.
These are challenging times, and
I wish I could be as confident as everyone around the table that I have an answer or a solution for how the theater is going to move forward, at least our theater. I'm still sort of trying to process things and understand what is the voice that we have and where we can make the most impact in terms of our storytelling that would hopefully move the ball forward and take advantage of whatever opportunities unveil. Very much like you said, you know, sometimes we need a splash of cold water in our face to wake us up and realize, you know, what the stakes are. Maybe we've been taking it too easy and too well for granted. I'm not confident that I would approach it in an activist mode. I'm not sure what the solution is, honestly. We are perhaps a little bit more nimble than others because we create our own stories. We're not completely dependent on what's on the shelf. As I think Bob has known for years, we've often used our forum to comment on issues that are relevant and important and timely. Back in the day, I remember when there were trying to pass propositions like 187 and 209 in California to, you know, limit and restrict immigration and things like that. We were able to create plays that spoke to that at that time. And I'm thinking about that as for the future, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I wish I had an answer for this. This has really been a stunner, I guess, you know, in terms of the sort of upside downness of things, and everything that we expected is not true.
Yeah, I suspect most people involved in the arts are believers in a multi-culture in many cultures, and we are coming out of and the expression and how you express that may be one of the most important ways you express that is simply by opening the doors to everybody's story, and maybe that's something that's very key to this political moment when we have an administration coming in that is coming in on a wave of white supremacy. I mean, let's not pussyfoot around it. That was a very large part of what happened. This is a white, male, retrogressive administration that is coming into power. Slap my face for saying something like that, but
no. Well, and
there we are.
That's part of the shocking.
So,
yeah, that's what we got shocked.
That's the upside downness of it. Yeah.
By having black or deaf actors in roles that are white roles, by doing Hispanic theater, by doing black theater, by mixing it up as Artist Rep's most Civil War Christmas does, where anybody of any color is playing any role of any color
and age,
and it doesn't make a difference. Simply by doing those things, you are presenting the alternative vision, the alternative story to the Trumpian story.
So here's the trick for us in Portland, being in a predominantly liberal community, then on a national level, I've been thinking to myself, I've been listening to certain podcasts that have introduced me to certain communities, you know, in Middle America, in the Midwest. How do we, as a small community, speak to the larger community? How do we put these stories of inclusion into the world that aren't already in agreement with us, you know, that aren't already attending theater? I don't know. Does anybody have a idea for that?
I think my instincts are my instincts are saying that.
Chantal, why don't you go ahead and
just
going to
say
you come back
if you wanted to show everything. All right, I'll come back.
My instincts are saying that it's not. It almost feels backwards to me to I don't know. I really don't have an answer. But my instinct is to say, focusing on the macro and focusing, even to say, let's cast people that look really different in the play. I think that me, what's most exciting is people are starting from within themselves. And they're saying, what do I, you know, what do I think when I walk down the street and see people? Or why do I buy these clothes? Why do am I watching this show? Why do I go to these stores and eat this food and listen to this music? I think I'm just so excited to have people have questions. Like you're saying, Jose, I don't have any answers right now. What's great is what are the questions, and as artists, I think that's where the investigation is, and I think this the movement in this time is most resonant for me on the individual level. How I can see people's gears are turning and their heads differently. I walk down the street and people, when I make eye contact with people, what's looking back at me is just a little different, and I think that's what it is. That's what the work is. That's what the big thing is. It's just within each person. And if we're looking there, searching there, then as we do our work and put our feet forward and try to grapple with, you know, as we do our thing, it's going to become enriched. But do the work that's on the outside. Absolutely, yes. But it's the inside stuff, and it's like, oh, I can do it myself. I'm doing it. I am doing it every day to talk and to ask questions.
Tell your grocer checkout you're in a show and want to come and reach out to. I mean, when I ride the Max, I'm notorious with postcards, and I don't know. I think there are a lot of people that I don't know in our community. I think maybe there are pockets of some people, it seems to be all of a sudden, that I haven't paid attention to, you know, and I think that
this sort of idea somewhat resonated with me when you were talking. A couple of things. One is that idea that you just express of getting out of your comfort zone. The fact that we were in this place now has potentially a lot to do with the fact that we took things for granted. The second idea is amidst all this mendacity that this incredible lying that was going on, and yet people were accepting it. What is the truth? And really searching in our work and in ourselves to really dig down and find that truth. You know, that I think is what really compels us to a great degree as artists. But it's even more important now when it seems like we don't really know what the reality is anymore. But just to go back to the beginnings, search deep, and then bring that forth and serve it. But getting out of the comfort zones, I think that's critically important. I think, in the whole conversation about diversity, we seldom visit each other's houses. We go to the houses where we're comfortable with. And even if the fare is different, we're still in our comfort zone. And I think we need to break out of that. I think we need to find places that challenge us because they're different and the work is different, and be in those places. Very much like visiting another land, you know, but we need to do that. And I think that's where we then begin to enrich in our experiences about each other and about what is important. And then we can take that and hopefully build on that for the future.
That you felt like maybe we got a little confused about why we were doing what we're doing and sort of chasing survival, you know. And I've kind of been curious about how in a crisis, so there's this sort of this economy, this ecosystem that involves money and capital and resources, and we're all in it. I mean, this is what we function in. But in moments of crisis, people are happy to extract resources from that economy and put them into the commons. So when there's an earthquake in Haiti, nobody talks about the pragmatism of raising $10 million. People just give, right? So I'm wondering if this opportunity the opportunity presented by this time right now is for us to reflect on why we do what we do, consider the possibility of disconnecting ourselves from that wheel that we've been on, and activating all of the people around us, all that sort of goodwill, because it is a crisis, right? So it's quite possible that our audience will do far more, and the far more is not giving money. The far more is, you know, inviting four people to a show, or taking your whole house down to another house to see another show, or doing a joint production, and you don't have to justify it financially in the same way you did, because everybody gets that this is not what that's about. And I'm wondering, so I guess I'm wondering if that's a possibility for us now. It's still risky, but in a way it's less risky because our audience and our constituency is awake to why it's happening. It's not, you know, a lifestyle choice. It's not like, oh, so I can have a nice evening at the theater. It's like life. Do you know what I mean? And people will do a lot more, I think, to sustain their lives than they will to sustain their lifestyles.
I think we're going to take a break.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll kind of shut down the recording part.
Okay.
David, can you tell us about sandwiches? Why don't you tell everybody the sandwiches, just because that's kind of fun for everybody to hear.
All right. Well,
sorry, you can't be here and have some.
We just switched up our sandwiches for the holiday season, so they're different from the last time you came in. We have on the top left of our Tower of Fingers sandwiches, it's going to be honey ham and English mustard on rye bread. Beside that, we have a chicken curry salad on wheat bread. Our other one on the bottom there is our cucumber and dill mayonnaise on white bread. And the last one is a tomato twiddle, which is tomatoes and cheddar cheese on white bread. In between these towers, we have our James Beard. It's sweet Vidalia onions and seasoned mayonnaise on white bread, and it's rolled in parsley.
I love that one.
On the next level, we have all of our scones. We have traditional and cranberry orange. Four of those are an English-style scone, so we have clotted cream shipped in from England and house-made mixed berry jam. On the top level, all of our house-made desserts, we have our toffee date pudding, we have our gingerbread people, we have our pistachio macaroon with a blood orange cream, and our Victorian cakes, which is going to be a citrus sponge cake layered with blackberry sage jam, blackberry sage cream on the top, and a lavender white chocolate chip.
Are you just non-gender specific on the gingerbread, just for us or for everybody? Well, thank you so much, and I can pretty much guarantee that we don't usually eat like this.
Enjoy.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're back. There was a lot of eating of sandwiches, and everyone's going to be a little slower now, probably. But Chantal suggested we talk about the holidays. Oh, sorry. No, she didn't. She didn't say that. She's choking on tea right now.
Every year I have an ironclad rule that the Christmas CDs cannot come out until Thanksgiving, and every year they manage to come out several days before then. So
you're not really ruling with an iron fist.
I am not ruling with an iron fist, no. But I do have some control over which CDs get played. The Santa Got Run Over by a Reindeer is still on the no-no list.
Yeah, one tradition that I've been doing ever since I was a kid is Christmas Eve we make tamales. And we spend the whole day making tamales, the entire family.
Nice.
And then we feast that night and drink.
Wow, and your address is?
I was kind of thinking that we don't have a lot of really strong traditions, so I'm wondering if maybe you pass the tamale recipe over to me, and then I could do
tamales. You have to come. There is no recipe. It's like,
did you just say I have to come? I mean, kind of like what Daryl said, so what's your...
We've had a lot of different people over to the house. It's not a training session. It's a work session. But it starts first thing in the morning, and it goes all through the day, and of course there's a lot of stuff going on. My nephews come in and they bring mimosas and all kinds of stuff goes on.
Sounds perfect. I was just talking to the cast yesterday at our show about doing Secret Santas. You know, we have a lot of kids in the cast, and I think they're probably not as excited about it as the bus are, but just it's fun, you know? You pick the name out of the hat.
Oh, that
would be my little
whips
and stuff.
I'm not sure. made the dress I wore to the dram is into a Christmas tree.
Stop it!
You did.
It's awesome. Okay, well, you're going to have to go further now, because what the heck does that mean? Did you stuff it?
Yeah, kind of.
Is that what people were saying?
Yeah.
You look like a Christmas tree.
I don't know. I just, when was the last time? You have to put things to good use. I'm a big believer in that. When was I going to wear that dress again? So now it's my Christmas tree. We have presents around it. It's like, it's a new tradition, I guess.
Did you say a nude tradition?
Well, I am now that it's
it's all the after just fucked it.
Yeah, a little bit of food and we're all sideways.
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, the holidays for artists and for cultural groups, what do you, people have traditions for the holidays, whatever their traditions are, and how do theater groups or musical groups respond to that? How many nutcrackers can you see? How much? And yet, people want that.
Everybody. You want to take your family somewhere and then go sit there and then I'll talk to you in intermission and then I'll talk to you later.
There was a nice undertow to those shows, yeah.
I'm conflicted about it every year as a producer because while I don't like feeling obligated to do something for the holiday season, we don't do a July 4th of July play. We don't do a Halloween play necessarily, but we feel a lot of pressure to do something Christmassy or holiday themed, and so I kind of resist and resent it a little bit. But then I love that when we do a play like Civil War Christmas or any of the programming around this time of year, a lot of new people find their way into the theater because there's friends and family in town, and the member of the family who loves theater or loves Artist Rep, and they end up using this opportunity to bring people to theater. So that's, I'm comforted by that. It's also, the play for us, and I know it's common around the country, like these Christmas shows sell more tickets than the main offering. I'm also conflicted about that, right? I don't.
But, one of the things I really liked about, that was not me, I did not do that.
We're all okay.
One of the things I really liked about Civil War Christmas, because I'm not a big fan of the obligation of Christmas. I want to be generous when I want to be generous, which is generally not when, the media and commercial and, enterprises tell me I'm supposed to be generous. But I loved that the message of that play was really peace and goodwill to men. And the whole Christmas story was just, it just when it happened. It just happened to be December when it happened. And so I felt like Christmas was more a setting for a bigger idea, and I really like that. And also, because you have all these people coming in, you kind of could take a risk in a way. It's like doing this multicultural cast with all this original music. I mean, that's not... ambitious, but also a little underhanded in a way. Getting a message across in a way that people wouldn't have expected. So I was really affected by that, and much didn't seem like a Christmas show to me at all. I wasn't seeing it that way. I was seeing it as a contemporary message show that happened to be placed in at Christmas.
Yeah, and that's how I've come to terms with whatever my baggage is about this. And every year, trying to kind of outwit it. We've tried counter programming, like anti Christmas show. I almost got fired for that. Then we did Noel Coward,
How'd that go?
It's sold real well. You're gonna do very well with your hay fever. And then, gosh, what did we do last year? I can't even remember. But Miracle Worker, again, another kind of like programming for how people feel during the time of year, and creating a space for families to come to the theater, but not necessarily doing something that was a Christmas show. And so, this with Civil War, we're calling it our post-election play. But I must admit, we thought it was going to be a different mood a time of progress versus a time of real uncertainty. So it's, you know, I feel like, but I'm still conflicted about it. And I'm already thinking about next year. And are we going to revive this? Are we looking for our Christmas carol? Are we trying to do something unexpected every year? Or are we going to avoid it one year?
During this time of the season, we put on one show. It's called Posada. It's free. And it's community-centric. We're really trying to get people who feel marginalized to join us by culture and by language. We have things for the children. Story, some crafts projects, music and dance. That's how we do our Christmas program.
When does it run?
It's one day, December 18th. And we have two shows. We give all the tickets away, like in the first 10 minutes. And then we spend the entire afternoon just enjoying singing and dancing and things like that. So, but you know, I have a similar thing. I sort of feel somewhat exploitive, you know. And so we found another way to do it. And in our case, it was really about making sure people were invited and included, and we had to minimize barriers to that kind of participation. And a lot of our focus is on minority communities, the Latino community, in terms of that. But also making sure that it was accessible to them on a level that they could appreciate the language and so. Anyway, but we do our Day of the Dead, which is our holiday show. We love it. What can I say? The public seems to love it. And every year it's completely brand new, original production that it goes from nothing to something. And,
how to look at loss in a new way.
Yeah.
And I think it could be, you know, really an earthquake for so many of us to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think it offers an incredibly healthy way to understand death. But even more so, it's really about celebrating life and the impact people have on us. So even though I describe it as sort of our meditation on death, you know, generally is a very positive expression. And in the tradition of the Mexican Day of the Dead, irreverent, funny, and witty, all those things that should be there as well. So it's interesting because we struggle with other organizations, not theatrical, but who want to sort of marry Halloween with Day of the Dead, and it's completely different situation. And so,
I loved it this year.
Thank you. Yeah, this year was, I think, more of a challenge than in some of the prior years because we were dealing with homelessness. And that's a charged subject in our community, and it's all around us. And so how do we deal with something like this without getting morbid or soapboxy or taking it too far into comedy? And so finding that spot. And I think that the other element that we were looking for, and I think that the actors wonderfully depicted, was there were real people behind this situation, not caricatures or policy statements or those things. These are people that are affected by a lot of different situations, in their control and out of their control. But they are part of our community. They're part of our fabric. We need to sort of personalize them, as opposed to looking at them as sort of objects. So it was a big challenge, I think, for the artist. I think they did a wonderful job of coming down.
Well, as we're winding down.
up that I would be curious if there was an artist that you would like to have come to the next tea party at Hotel Deluxe. So, is anybody ready to share one?
Before that, can I put a plug in for a Christmas show that I saw last year and I'd love to see again? And that's Black Nativity, produced by Passin Art, at a little tiny church in North Portland. And last year I saw it. It was just one of the most beautiful things that I think I've seen in a long time. Really from the heart, beautiful music, beautiful singing.
I'll put Passin Art's website on the podcast.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah,
please
sure do. Will. Hey, if there's any other artistic endeavor that we should put on the website this week also, don't hesitate to pop it in.
Portland Rebels has their annual performance coming up.
So we'll put that on there too.
Yeah, I think they're doing an Italian Commedia this year.
Right.
Yeah, I'm actually going to Black Nativity over the weekend, and Jerry Foster is a person who really comes to mind.
Yes, absolutely.
I've interviewed him before, but he's never had the tea, so I'll invite him.
Yeah, Jerry's fantastic.
And earlier we were talking about an actress.
Veronica Nunez. Yes.
Yes. Reach out to her.
Yes.
Veronica, Jerry.
And I think Douglas Dietrich, the creative director of the Portland Jets Composers Ensemble, would be a great person. He's really incredibly active in, you know, commissioning new music and education and really, you know, creating a space for the younger artists in the jazz scene and beyond, connecting the jazz scene with, you know, they did an incredible concert with singer-songwriters in which they commissioned the ensemble to arrange all these original works of Portland singer-songwriters to do with a 14-piece big band, and it was unbelievable. It's a stunning, stunning concert. So, yeah, really fantastic.
Okay, I'm going to invite Doug Damaso. What do you think?
Someone comes to mind is Nelda Reyes, who's worked a lot at Milagro and Profile, and she's an actor and director, working with us at Artist Rep this spring on a show. Meet her. And of course, I don't know if you've interviewed Kevin Jones yet for your podcast, but we've got to get him here.
I'm going to try to get him here next time.
Yeah.
Chantal, what do you think? Someone fun and interesting.
Well, someone readily jumps to mind. Her name is Emily Squires, and she is an artist, a visual artist, and she works with various populations. She creates art within the prison system, creates art with LGBTQ youth, and does a lot of work with them and a lot of work with training individuals and companies and groups about LGBTQ education. She is brilliant and very funny and very talented and gets the theater world. And I would say Emily Squires, who works with NAFI, New Avenues for Youth, the high school for homeless youth downtown. She's great. You'll have a blast.
I'm thinking of, and I cannot think, help me out here, it's one of those things, not on the tip of my tongue, the Asian theater company in town. Samson Seerath.
Oh, Samson, great.
Yeah, he's a good soul, and he works a lot, is very passionate about diversity and culture, and he's a good man.
Great.
And he works for me, so.
Does everybody who you invited like sandwiches?
Yes.
That's the first thing we asked.
Yes. He was just saying to me, Beth, I love sandwiches.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of this. I always feel heartened when I'm with artists who are doing this work. It gives me a lot of hope, despite our current circumstances. So until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.